You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome in, welcome in. And we are glad that you are here once again with the Bite Me Podcast. John Lopez, no, Captain Caleb McCumber. You know, we haven't even had an official announcement yet. But Caleb is now, rather than kind of the Kramer of the group from the old Seinfeld episodes, just swooping in once in a while through the front door, he's actually a regular member, a regular part of the Bite Me Podcast. So officially welcoming Caleb, even though we've been doing it now for a couple of months. But if you enjoy what Caleb brings, I know you do. I do. Certainly enjoying what Scott brings. We really appreciate it. And he is now officially, we got to get you a hat or something, with the Bite Me Podcast crew. And of course, before we get into the topics today, really good stuff. In fact, a deep dive, as I like to say, into skinny water and getting into it and out of it the right way. Not just the tactics, but a lot of times people want to get there. They're a little apprehensive on how to get in and out. Maybe don't know, don't trust Google Earth as much as they should. Etc. But there are things you can do to get in and out of it, to maybe take advantage of some redfish, which I know a lot of people are right now, more so on the middle coast and lower coast where the trout have been a little bit sketchy at post-freeze. So we're going to dig into that. We're going to dig into this time of year, man. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and all that other good stuff to everybody who listens to this podcast. We really appreciate you listening. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. You know the drill. iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever else you get your podcast. And these questions, by and large, come from you. And so that's the gift that keeps on giving to us from you, is asking your fishing questions, tactics and styles, et cetera. So you can go to the great Facebook group page, Bite Me, search it, Bite Me Fishing. You'll find the group page. We probably have some common friends, and it'll be easy to get to. And all kinds of other stuff. You know, why fish were on one day last weekend and completely off the next day. I know there's going to be the word high pressure mentioned, and I'm just going to sit back and listen to Scott and Caleb get after each other on that. Maintenance schedule for your boat. We talked to JT last week and actually got a question for JT, which is cool, from one of the listeners about, you know, some of the details of what really should work and what you should and shouldn't do on boat maintenance, maybe even winterizing. Is that such a thing in the Gulf Coast where we listen? So wherever you're listening, Florida to the Florida, tip of Florida down to the Keys, all the way to South Texas, we really appreciate it. Let's get into it. And I gave Caleb only a slight heads up on this before I clicked record on this podcast. One of our listeners said, ask Caleb this. And of course, I know Scott's going to come in as well, but he said, don't tell him. I said, all right, I can do that. That sounds like it's going to be a plan. So the question, Caleb, is what is the importance of barbless hooks on a jig or a hook, and your thoughts on that? Apparently this is something that you have a strong opinion on.
I was going to ask for names, but I know who this guy was. Listen, so I've been really preaching conservation, and I decided to take it to the next level. And the barbless that you are thinking of, and the barbless that happened in this situation, are two totally different deals. Because the people that smash the barb down so it doesn't damage the fish when you take the hook out, those are just complete amateurs when it comes to the conservation game. Okay. Mm-hmm. What we decided to do is use hooks that didn't have points on them either. So it's nice and
so
round.
We would call that pointless fishing.
You had me confused there for a second, because I've done that. I was like, wait, what?
And Scott stole my punchline.
So yeah. What? I missed it. I spoke over it, so you can say it now.
No, I mean, it was pointless fishing. We and instead of poking it through his lip, it's a lot more sporting to try to keep him at an angle all the time where you can just candy cane him in. And that, you know, and the guy, he failed miserably, but wants to throw flack at me about it. I mean, the fish were in front of him. He caught them, but he just couldn't get onto the boat. It's something I think everybody should work on. And it's just not for beginners, really. I mean, I don't know
any way to put it. Backstory on this, a pointless hook.
Yeah. We were red fishing. It was yesterday, I think. And, I had a brand new pack of jig heads, and my packs come with like 300 in there. And I grabbed one out and handed it to him, and he lost two or three fish. And we were giving him grief badly. And unfortunately I was the one giving him the most amount of grief. And I don't know, about halfway through the day, I gave him a topwater. He started catching fish on topwater, and I'd cut off the lure that I gave him, and I'm looking at it. And I didn't remember giving him this jig head. I'm looking at it. I said, you dope. Your jig head doesn't even have a point on it. And he said, that's the one you tied on my line. Oh, all right. Well, let's move on. Let's talk about something else.
So when you pressed it down, you clipped it?
No, the jig head. It was either defective, or I don't know. Instead of a point where it would penetrate the fish's mouth, it was rounded. I mean, you could put it into your palm and pull it as hard as you can, and it'd be like a ballpoint pen. The thing is, he caught some really good fish. I mean, they were drag burners.
Well, he didn't.
Well, I mean, like I said, it's not for beginners.
Except one little detail, he didn't.
It is not for beginners. Hey, book a couple more trips with me. I'm a teaching guide. I'll teach you how to catch fish without hooks. It's really not that difficult.
Yeah, dynamite. I mean, that's the best way.
The really cool part of it is he held on to those fish for like 15 or 20 seconds with no hook.
Well, there you go. There you go. He's probably better than you gave him credit for. So full disclosure now, first name was Chris, and he texted me that this morning and said, you might want to ask Caleb about this. I'll tell you what, though, Scott, that's opening up a whole new competition. Next time we're on a boat, is to start clipping those suckers, see who can actually land one of them.
Yeah, they always talk about letting the flounder have it, you know, and he's got to swallow it.
Yeah, anybody can catch a big fish on light line, 2-pound test, 4-pound test. Do it without a hook, then we'll be impressed.
Then get back to me.
Hey, it's like crabbing. You just got to pull in real slow.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, and I mentioned at the top of the podcast here, this time of year, everybody's getting into the Christmas spirit. Christmas lights are finally up. I always wait until after Thanksgiving to put them up because I'm old school. I'm not one of those guys that jumps the gun with their lights. So we're all enjoying it. It's a good time of year because, you know, this is the time when we're out getting, you know, getting stuff. Getting stuff for each other. So I want to mention the Fishing Tackle Unlimited Fishing Expo this coming Saturday at the Katy location. And I traded text with Lauren over there, and they're really excited about it. They've got all kinds of good stuff ready, and they have all kinds of everything. You know, Sims waders. They have obviously all the lures, the corkies, and everything else. We're going to have all the teaching pros out there, and Scott, you and I, or I think we're batting leadoff. What is it? 10:30, something like that. We're going to be batting leadoff of all the quote unquote seminars or Q&As, whatever you want to say. So I really hope a lot of the Bite Me listeners come out and come to our seminar, but also come out to the Fishing Tackle Unlimited location. Not to beat a dead horse, but this is the time of year when you're getting the stuff that you want, the stuff you want for that fisherman or fisherwoman in your life. And this is the place to go, Scott. I mean, it's really cool. It's kid in a candy store kind of stuff.
Yep. It's everybody from all the different manufacturers, you know, whatever you want to get into. If you've got a specific question about a reel, you know, how many bearings does this reel have, or how well does it hold up in salt water? You can talk to the people from the factory or the sales reps, and they'll all be there.
Right.
So it's a good it's a really good time to be hands-on and ask hard questions to the manufacturers.
Yeah, and it got me to thinking about this, and this is a question for our listeners, and actually is kind of a tip. So many of our listeners, like us, probably have, you know, a garage full or a shop full or a room full of fishing gear. And I was talking to Caleb about this before you came on, Scott. You know, what Bite Me listeners may want for Christmas, but didn't even realize. And what I'm getting at there, and I'll start it off this time just so you guys can kind of percolate on what you think is some unique things that I just swear by. Like I have them on my boat. They're not on a lot of people's boats, you know, things that you use, whether it's fishing related, boat related, or otherwise. And the example that I gave clearly when I took that video that I posted on the Bite Me group page, I did not have this in my pocket because it was only a 3-second video of my forehead and my Aggie's hat.
That's what I thought. When you sent that over, I started laughing.
Yeah, because the battery was out. I needed to change the battery. But the one thing that I often use on my boat, and it has been a godsend that you may want to think about for you know, your significant other or yourself this Christmas season, very inexpensive. It's about the size of a silver dollar, if you see any of those anymore, maybe a little bit bigger than a quarter if you're not familiar with what a silver dollar is. And it's a little remote that has one of those flat batteries, I forgot what they're called, in it. And it's a remote for your camera phone. So what I do, and you guys have seen that little bracket that I keep on the front of my helm where you can, you know, just put your camera on there. So what I do is if I have somebody on the front of the boat or if I'm on the front of the boat myself, and they hook a fish or whatever it may be, I just press that button. And you don't have to worry about going to your phone, opening the camera, doing all that stuff. You just press the button and the camera immediately turns on, whether you have it on video or whether you have it on photo mode. This is a really good thing because you like to document all these things. We always talk about catch and release and things like that. This is a great way to get that live action video or shot. And it doesn't really cost that much. I don't have the price in front of me. I got mine at Amazon. They come in a 2-pack. It makes for some really good candid shots as well. I've got some pictures of like my now daughter-in-law catching her first fish. And my son has kind of got his fist in the air jumping up. And you don't get those pictures, you know, if you have to go back to the camera. So it really is. That's one thing that I have. I thought, Scott, we'll get to you, but I thought Caleb had a couple of really good things that you may not even realize that would be great on your boat or fishing related. What do you got, Caleb?
And I think the number one underrated thing on my boat are the boomerang line cutters. I think they're called the original snip, my boomerang. You can get them at FTU. You can get them at Anglers Anonymous. They cut braid. They cut mono. They last a pretty, I mean, considering how much I use them, they'd last me about 2 months. I think they would last somebody else a little bit longer, but they're super sharp. Even if the braid didn't pull tight, they cut really well. And they're like $12-$13, not much to it. Probably the other thing that I get a lot of use out of are the stainless needle holder pliers. You can get those on Amazon for $14-$15. That I would suggest the 8-inch ones. If you search it, you need to really type in 8-inch because it's going to show you 1,000,006 inches that look bigger mm-hmm. than they are. Ask me how I know. I have about 15 pairs in my house that I've ordered. But if you're really shopping for a fisherman, the line cutters, the hemostats, that's something they probably don't have in the boat already. And then, you know, what you and I were talking about, John, is a gift card to FTU or Anglers Anonymous or something like that. Because it's hard to shop for another fisherman. It really is. There's no chance I could go to the store and buy you or Scott anything that y'all would that would be just what you were looking for. It just doesn't work that way.
And on those boomerangs, I just got I had those other little kind of small scissor looking clippers. They were fine, but I got the boomerangs and they're fantastic. I swear by them now. And again, these are all unpaid endorsements. We're just telling you what are good things to on your boat. Scott, I'm sure, you know, as long as you've been in the game, there are certain little, I hate to call them gadgets, but certain little things on your boat, whether it's fishing related, reel related, or boat related, that you would swear by that maybe a lot of people don't have on their boat.
Yeah, I go simple. You know, I'm so simple with it that I'm pretty basic. I would think most everything that I would carry on the boat other people would have actually. The one thing that we've talked about here before is that NOCO jump starter. It's
yes.
A little bitty jump starter pack that's, I mean, it's palm sized. It's not very big at all. And it comes in a little package, a little zippered pouch, and it's got jumper cables on it. And I keep, you know, I charge it up here at the house. You plug it into a USB port, charges it. It stays charged forever. I mean, the thing's always charged up. It's got a USB out so you can plug in your phone. If your phone starts dying, you can also start your boat with it. I played around with it. I took my battery off and hooked it up to this and just to test it out, see if it would actually start my boat. And it does. For something so small, you wouldn't think that it'd be able to do it. But I've started my diesel tractor. I played around with it a little bit, and I've started all kinds of stuff out here. You know, on the ranch, batteries go dead.
Yeah.
And it's kind of nice to have it.
Well, how do you spell that?
Yeah, how do you spell that?
N-O-C-C-O.
Okay.
N-O-C-C-O. People are going to be asking.
That's something. Yep. Yeah, no, those are things.
And there's all different sizes. You know, there's bigger, stronger ones. I don't remember exactly the amp that I got, but it's plenty enough to start. Hell, it'll start a diesel engine. It'll start anything.
Yeah. The last thing that I want to mention, I mentioned my little camera holder. You can see these. It's kind of a tripod, but the legs are flexible, and you can hold your camera on it. Because how many times on your camera you're leaning it against something, or it's all askew. I get the little tripod with the flexible legs, and you can wrap it around any of the things on your boat pretty much, and it'll hold that camera nice and tight. So, you know, Caleb, you're talking about it's hard to buy stuff for fishermen because we're so particular about the things we like when it comes to fishing. Everything we just mentioned, you can buy for any of us, and we'd be happy.
No, yeah, that jumper, this, because I want one now. That jumper's on Amazon, $50 off, it's $199, N-O-C-O.
N-O-C-O.
I thought it was two C's, but
yeah. You know, Daniel bought one of these. It was really nice until I left the plug out of the boat hatch, and then it didn't handle the salt water real well. They're not waterproof.
Well, we're going to get to that, of course. But all right, so let's get to some fishing here, some actual fishing. But that I thought that'd be good for our listeners. Here we are, bearing into the second week of December, and a lot of our listeners, whether they're male or female, make their non-fishing spouse or significant other listen to the podcast when they're driving to the ramp, or listen to the podcast when they're driving somewhere. So, you know, take note. And for that person that's sitting next to you as you're listening to this podcast, all those things and more, you know, that we'll get to over the next few weeks, you can get them for Christmas, and that'll be good. And again, the totally unpaid endorsements on all that stuff, it's just stuff that we like. Now, let's get to some fishing, as I mentioned. This was just a revelation that I had, so to speak. It's about as big a revelation as I can get. Whether it was Friday, Saturday, I don't remember, but I was going into a back lake, and I saw some guys come, you know, bearing out of there, which is fine. And I'm trying to work my way into particular areas of skinny water, whether it's a back lake or on a shoreline or whatever. And so the question is, you know, getting into and out of skinny water the right way. We always kid around with you, Caleb, and I always try to qualify it because it's fun. You know, the daring, you know, sort of personality that you have on the water, but you're no dummy on this stuff, and you're a great fisherman. So I'm going to start with you because you know how to get in and out of these places. I've gone into back lakes thinking that I'm way back. And then I look up I get on my tower and I'm like, I think that's Caleb over there, another half mile in than I am. So it's so bizarre that you know your stuff, you know what you're doing on all these things. Scott, actually, let me start with you because I think Caleb is doing something right now. But, you know, I'll go through some bullet points here. You know, common mistakes. Let's start right there. Common mistakes that people make when they're fishing skinny water, whether it's in a back lake, a bayou, or a very skinny shoreline. What are some of the things you're seeing out there?
They don't pay attention to the wind direction, and the wind blows them up shallower than they can get off of. You know, that's what happened to Caleb down there in that tournament. He got blown up onto a little hump out there in the middle, it's not usually the humps that give you the problems. It's the drifting into a shoreline. I see people doing it all the time, drift fishing along our shorelines here in Port O'Connor that are, you know, grass out 100 yards or so.
Right.
And when you get up too tight to the bank, it's really dadgum shallow. It's up there where I'm poling in 6 inches. And they're drifting and they're catching a fish or two. And next thing you know, they've drifted too far and they're in a big boat that maybe not even having a trolling motor.
Right.
And trying to fire up the big motor and get back out of there. And they're just tearing up the grass, you know, just turning it. That's probably the number one biggest mistake I see with people around shallow water. Number two would just be cutting across it, you know, and not really knowing. I laughed about it this summer. We had had super high tides all spring. And I mean, way up in the grass, big high tides, big bull tides. And then all of a sudden we had a little kind of a freak norther late in the spring. It blew all our water out. And I mean, it dropped a good 2 feet. And these guys have been running around for 2 or 3 months with high water. And I told my customers that day, I said, we're going to see a bunch of people running up on running aground.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, I have places where I drive by on my way out that I look at. I look at the dock, you know, as I'm launching.
And you know, water level.
The water level. You know, so I'm thinking already, okay, I can't go in there. I can go in there, but I can't go over there. You know, there's there's a shallow reef across the front of that that's going to be about 2 inches deep right now. Maybe later in the day when the tide comes up, I can slide in there. But I have other markers on docks, houses that are out in the bay, you know, some of the stilt houses, just poles that are out in the bay, some points, you know, real rocky point that's got a lot of shell on it. And if 4 feet of shell is showing out from the bank, I know it's pretty shallow. If the shell's covered up all the way to the bank, I know I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
That gives me clues as to whether or not I can go back into some of the back lakes and still be okay. If crab traps are a good indicator, there's something to watch, but crab traps will also lie to you.
Yeah. I've been lied to.
Yeah.
I do use them all the time. I don't want to discourage anyone because they are a good indicator.
They're a very good indicator, but only choose the ones that look new, somewhat new.
Yeah. Because some of them rusted away, forgotten, whatever. And I know they try to clean them up every year, but still there's always going to be some that like lyrebirds, they're telling you the wrong story.
Some get thrown out into soft mud and they sink down in that mud and there's only, you know, half of it sticking up out of the mud and you think it's a full crab trap and that the bottom is very close to the top around there sometimes.
Yeah.
And that can screw you up.
Oh, it can. And exactly what you're doing. You've been to my place. I've got that little canal behind my trailer. And so I get up in the morning and if it's dark, I'll just flash the light over there and I'll look, there's this line, an imaginary line, but there's this line I see across the way. If the water's halfway up this one piling on the dock across the way, I'm like, okay, well the tide is all the way out. Now I'm good. If it's below that, you know, like you said, I got to wait. You have these little markers, landmarks, so to speak, of I can get in, I can get out. But here's the more important question for our listeners. A lot of people trying, you know, more red fishing now, so to speak, with good reason. They don't know. Google Earth is your friend, 100%. I think a lot of people may not trust Google Earth as much as they can or should, even in some cases, in some instances. How do you know, forget the shorelines and skinny water, you know, getting up into some of these bayous and drains and such, how do you decide? Is it just trial and error, a putter in, putter out? That's generally my go-to. If I can putter in, I can putter out. And I'm always cognizant of what the tide is at that moment. So I'll know when the tide's either higher or lower, if I can get in or get out. But how do you know, like, this drain I can get to, this one I can't get to?
Generally, I pull most everywhere first before I'll run it. You know, if it's some, you know, if I'm going to a new area, like when I first started going to Louisiana, the obvious places I ran, you know, I mean, really obvious,
right,
wide open. There were some cuts that were shortcuts through the marsh that I kept looking at and thinking, man, that saved me about 20 minutes instead of going all the way around the other end over here.
Right.
I kind of like to run through there But let me go check it out first, because if you've ever fished in any of the marsh in Louisiana, it's not just about depth. It's about what's under the water. Mm-hmm. Over there. There's pipes and all kind of junk that's underneath their water. And so I will pull a route and feel every inch of that bottom. And then I know where there's hard spots, where there's maybe a, you know, piece of debris, whatever it is. And then I can feel confident that I can run through there the rest of the time.
Right.
I do that at home, you know, mm-hmm. especially like after a big storm, you know, after a hurricane, it's a real good idea to either go really slow through the areas that even places you're familiar with, or pole them, wait them, whatever it takes to learn the bottom again, because it can change dramatically with just one storm.
What about Google Earth? Because you, the thing with me that I'm cautious about, and I'm admittedly always a little bit more cautious, you know, than some people, maybe a little more than you, certainly a lot more than Caleb, is I don't know exactly when that image was taken of this particular spot. And with the weather changes, with the storms we've had, I'm a little bit more, but Google Earth really is your friend. If you can find, particularly, let's say I want to go up this drain. I'll give you an example. Like I saw Caleb up this drain. I just mentioned it. And he was like about a half mile further than I would even imagine going. I went back home. It was the next day or whatever. And I went to that spot and looked on Google Earth. I'm like, well, how did Caleb get back there? Or how did this boat get back there? I'm just using Caleb as an example. And so you can kind of use Google Earth like, oh, okay, I can get back there doing this or that, because these drains often spider in different directions. And so you have to kind of know via that. And that's where that comes in handy, right?
Yeah, you have to look at, because it shows up different every time that they take those. And some areas they take them every year, some places every 2 years. My house, you know, it hadn't been done over my house in probably 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you can tell, you know what it looks like.
Yeah, I've been working on the place and I've dug mm-hmm. a pond and it's not on there. Mm-hmm. But if you look, you can kind of get an idea of different times of the day that they, you know, that it takes. They take those photos, different cloud cover, you know, different sun angles. Some of the areas look great. I mean, you can pick out a little oyster shell reef that's underwater.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's others where there's a sheen on it on the water and it's really hard to see any kind of depth.
Yeah.
So you have to look at areas that you're familiar with that are nearby, see what they look like. You know, say, you know, this bayou is plenty deep enough to run. It's 3, 4, 5 feet. Look at the color of the water.
Bingo. You just read my mind again. Yeah. Like look at the color. Tint of the water that where right. you know you can go versus the tint right. of the water in that drain. Like, well, that's the same. You know, right. So I can go there.
And it just takes time. Yeah, you know, you kind of got to play with it a little bit. And you can learn, like going up bayous, one corner is going to be shallow. You know, like generally speaking, inside corners are going to be the deeper. Mm-hmm. Then the outside corner is more of a flat spot. You know, it kind of goes up, but it's not always like that. So that's where Google Earth can help you out. Yeah. It'll show you some sandbars and things like that that you're not aware of.
Now, yeah, running
every now and then, there's a sandbar that comes off of a point pretty good ways.
Right.
And you can generally see those.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, let's say you're running all these drains and bayous, they serpentine, you know, they have turns in them. Generally speaking, and I'm going to hop to Caleb on this one, but generally speaking, again, generally speaking, if you're running through a bayou or a drain, you put the nose of your boat on the turn you're going into, so the back of your boat can maybe fishtail out a little bit and then turn the other way. Caleb, you know, we're you know, Scott was great on some of the common mistakes and knowing when to, you know, working shorelines and what to look at and using Google Earth to find that the particular tint of a place where you know you can run your boat, and if that matches up in a drain, you can probably run up in that drain. But as I'm mentioning your name, you know, I've seen you. I'm just using you as an example because I've done this with other boats. I'll see you up a particular drain that I've never been up to. I go back home. I don't attempt it on the spot unless I can putter in. But I go back home and I look at Google Earth and I'm like, okay, so that must be the way that, he or this boat got up in there. But what's your general, you've been doing it for so long now, some of these are second nature, but we have a lot of listeners that would like to do some more red fishing and maybe some more exploring. Generally speaking, how do you determine, Caleb, okay, this is a drain that I can go up to and through, and this is a drain that, I can fish?
Maybe whenever I'm out fishing and I'm fishing, you know, wherever that drain comes out at, whenever there's a good outgoing tide, I can see a lot of water movement coming through it. Whenever I see all that water movement, then it gives me a good idea that this probably got some depth to it. And that would give me a little bit more confidence to try to go up it and see what's behind it. Mm-hmm. Most of those drains, you're going to be able to putt through them and take it easy and, you know, not get yourself in too big of a bind. About the only thing you're going to find in there, maybe be, you know, shell or some of those drains have duck blinds on the edges, stuff like that. But if you can see good water current coming through them, then that's telling you pretty well that it's got some depth to it, you know. And then when you leave your harbor, look at the tide. Where's it at? If the tide is normal or above normal, then you have a little bit more leeway to go check it out. If the tide's really low that day, then, you know, that's not the day to do it.
Yeah. And, you know, when you can putter in and putter out, we always talk about that. But, you know, when you're working shallow water at the same time, one other thing, and I know we're getting real technical here, but I think a lot of our listeners are going to appreciate it. Is there a certain width that you're looking at, or does it matter necessarily if it's as long as it's wider than your boat? Again, I know Scott's laughing because sometimes we don't all abide by this, but is there a certain width, or can it be, you know, deep enough, even if it's just say a foot or two on each side of your boat?
No, a width doesn't matter much to me at all. I will look and see if there are some nasty curves, you know, up there a little ways. And that's going to take some Google Earth. Yeah. Y'all have been with me whenever boat width meant nothing because I was jumping edges with it. And, you know, it was kind of funny. The same fellow that sent you that question you opened with, when we got to one of the spots, they looked at me and said, how did you learn this? I said, man, pushing forward, just pushing forward.
Yeah.
And you had said the same thing whenever we got there too. But no, width doesn't matter to me at all, as long as there's not, you know, a nasty cutback or something up there I can't get around. And that has caught me before. I've found said nasty cutback, and it makes for a nasty situation.
And one other thing, this is me. I don't know if you guys have done this, but I'm a little bit more careful than Scott, and a lot more careful than you, Caleb. But when I putter into a particular drain or bayou, I still turn my boat into the turns. I don't just go straight because I can read the depth finder better. You know what I mean? Like, so if ever I come in here a little faster, I'll know I can turn into this turn, and it's going to be deep enough, presuming the tide is all right. And this is why I always say, and Scott gets tired of me saying this, I think so many people underutilize their electronics. Even if I'm puttering in, I'll kind of turn in like I would if I'm on plane, so I can see what the depth is as I'm going. Not, you don't remember everything, but you kind of get a good idea of, okay, this drain is going to be good enough for me to come in at 20 miles an hour, or in Caleb's case, 35 miles an hour.
Well, 35 gets you there quicker, and you can bounce off of stuff faster. The insides and the outsides of corners are typically where. Well, I mean, it does have its drawbacks, but insides and outsides of turns are usually where you're going to find your sandbars, your shell, or whatever that is. So, yeah, just go for it. I mean, it's insured. It's insured.
It's insured. No doubt about it. All right, a couple more things on this. I said we're going to do a deep dive, and I think this is good information for our guys and girls that are listening. I swear these are not loaded questions, Caleb. So, but I'm going to start with you on this one. Knowing when and when not to punch through, you know, because, you know, I know certain drains pretty well, certain back lakes pretty well. That I just tell myself or the people that I'm with, like this past weekend, I had a couple of guys from a charity auction winner type deal. And I got back to a back lake and they said, well, thank you for the trip to Disney, because I knew it so well, I could get back there pretty quick. Then we kind of start pulling some mud in a certain area. And I told them, don't worry about it. It's deeper right there. We'll just punch right through. But that's more experience. Is there, are there anything else, Caleb? I'll start with you that you can, you know, use as that background. Hey, don't worry about this. It's not going to get skinnier. It's going to get deeper. We can just punch through.
I think that's 100% experience. Or, you know, Scott and I have talked about it a million times where if there's a shallow spot, but there's a bottleneck where two lakes meet, then you know it's deeper over there. But really the only time that I'm really going to just, and something I don't know whenever it's just time to punch it, is when, if I feel myself start bumping, I'm going to trim it out and just give it every RPM it has until I get somewhere different. Because there's nothing else you can do at that point.
Yeah.
If you back off of it, you're done.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times, if you try to turn, you're done. Now, what I might do is kind of bob, weave back and forth just a little bit, see if I can find that little bit of deeper crease, you know, wherever I'm at. But when it's somewhere I don't know, it is, I'm going to lay on it as soon as I feel that motor start bumping.
Scott, what are your thoughts on that punching through? I know you got some experience with this.
Yeah, I mean, he's exactly right. That's the difference between somebody who's run a boat a lot in shallow water and somebody who hasn't. Most people, I've done it with my dad in the boat where I came around a corner and I knew it was going to be shallow. I mean, I'd already looked at my markers. I knew dead gum good and well. We were running across 4 inches of water, but it was soft mud. So mm-hmm. I know it's soft mud. And so we had to go about 100 yards across the soft flat, and it was just a quicker and easier way to get there. So
I'm sure your dad didn't have anything to say about that.
He didn't say anything until we were done.
In this situation, people typically just lock up on you.
Yeah, they get really, people get speechless.
Does this guy know what he's doing?
Yeah. And with the cool thing with those little Poland skiffs, like my East Cape, it had a little bit of a V to it. And when you hit a spot like that, if you just turn the wheel really hard, the boat wasn't going to turn. It was still going to go straight, but it was going to turn up on its side and slide.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could slide, and then when I'd feel it just slowing down a little bit, I'd spin the wheel hard the other way and gun it, and then it would go another 20 or 30 yards, and then I could do it back to the left, right, left, right.
Mm-hmm.
And I would snake my way across a flat by laying the boat over on its side. You can't really do that with some of these big flat boats, you know, like what Caleb's running. You don't have that opportunity, but you have a flatter bottom and you've got, you know, got it jacked up pretty good. And the boats will move through that soft mud pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and don't do this in the grass. Don't do it in where you're going to tear stuff up. But most of our marshes have got that real soft, boggy mud, and you can get away with a whole lot in there. My dad, when we got to the other side, slowed it down, shut it down a little bit. He says, you know, most people, when they feel it hit bottom, they don't go faster and start spinning side to side. He said, what the hell were you doing? And I said, well, we got here, didn't we?
Yeah, we're home.
I mean, we made it.
Exactly. It's funny, Caleb, that you mentioned people lock up because just this past weekend I had those two guys on the boat. And I was so proud of myself because I try to avoid this at all costs, but I thought of you because I was going through a very shallow area of mud. And I got the proverbial high pitched tone on my motor, warning tone, beep, you know, like we're in a little trouble here with the motor. We're in some, and I'm like, man, Caleb would be proud of me. I got so thin that I got the warning tone on my motor. And nobody said anything until later. It's like, what was that? I was like, oh, we're cool. We're straight. It went off.
Yeah. My hearing is terrible and I have real bad ringing in my ears. I can't hear those things. I can't tell you how many times I've been fishing and somebody looked over at me and said, are you going to do something about that alarm or not? No, what are you talking about? I don't hear it. Why is that why Steve's running in circles yapping right now? What's happening?
All right. So a couple more things on this. So hopefully people can really pick up a lot on all these little bullet points that I'm making. This is something I know because I was on your boat and you did the exact same thing that I've tried to do, Caleb. And that is when you are looking at some fish or some potential fish, you know, the trolling motor, a lot of people hustle over there on their trolling motor and then they change the speeds, they slow down and all that. I am very much in line with what you and Scott do. And that is get the trolling motor to a particular level and don't change it. Because if you're on fish and every little sound when you're in a quiet, you know, back lake or drain or whatever could alert those fish, correct?
Oh, yeah. The sound and the vibration that you're putting through the water, no doubt. If, you know, when I'm out fishing schools with customers, I tell them, like, when I get so close, you're just going to hit your shots. I can't slow down. I'm not going to change direction. I'm going to get you within your distance. And it's all up to you after that. If I come off of this motor or turn it or do anything, those fish are real likely to be gone. Yeah. My typical MO is I'll bump it up. Heck, I'll bump it all the way to 10 if I'm trying to get around them, but I stay a good ways away from them. Once I close into, about 50 yards or so, that trailer motor's on 3 or below, and I'm gonna take my best guess at what those fish are doing. I'm gonna take an angle on them and try to intercept them with that, you know, 3 or below. And that's just how it is. We're either going to get a shot at them or we're not.
Yeah. Actually, I need to correct my own strategy there. I usually have it at 4 or 5 and just leave it there and then just turn it off as they're casting or I'm casting or whatever. But that's good information.
Well, see, but you don't turn it off either.
No, I'm saying after I cast, you know, once you cast, I try to stay there as long as I can. But you just go through them is what you're saying.
Well, yeah. I mean, most of the time they're moving to a way that I'm going to go past them one way or the other. And my trailer motor is covered in stabilizers. It's real quiet, but I still don't change it. I don't turn it whenever I get close. It's at the most, once one guy hooks up, I might kill it and give that other guy a shot because that other guy's only getting a shot for a second. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, 3 and below. I really don't like to be any more than that. I've had a funny scenario. Scott, maybe Scott can talk about this, but for about the past 2 or 3 weeks, about 3 weeks ago, I blew up my good Altera with the stabilizers on it. And now I just have a regular Altera that it buzzes a little bit. Right. And as I'm approaching these schools, if I get within about 30 yards of them, 8 out of 10 schools will turn and kamikaze the front of my boat. They come to the vibration of that trolling motor. Now, again, I'm not changing it. I'm not doing anything. It's a steady vibration, but they will come straight to that boat 8 out of 10 times.
What do you think, Scott?
They do it to me all the time, polling. I mean, it's funny, but it's frustrating too. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll have a guy up there, and I'm trying to get 4 or 5 fish out of one school, you know, so we're picking off a fish off the back end of it, and he hooks up, and I'm polling, trying to stay away from the school and just let them keep going. And those damn things will U-turn and come, and I mean, just bullet right to the boat. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how often it happens in these big schools in the shallow water. I don't really understand why they would do it other than there's maybe a little hull slap and it sounds like feeding fish to them. Right. That's the only thing I can think of that would make them do that.
All right, Scott, this one is for you to start. I think it's something that you and I are in lockstep over. And it's the last bullet point here on Skinny Water the Right Way. And that is fishing hard, getting your fish, but without raking the ecosystem. I mean, and this is very, very important. You know, my personal strategy, if you will, is if I'm fishing a shoreline way back in some lake or whatever, and I'm ready to move on, I just use the trolling motor out into some deeper water before I turn the big motor on, because we want to be there every day if we could. And we don't want to rip stuff up, tear stuff up, oyster shell, forget what it's doing to our boat. You know, what it does, Scott, to where we're fishing. I can't emphasize this enough. And I got a feeling that you would agree with that.
Yeah. It's very seldom are you a long ways from deep enough water to take off without tearing anything up. I mean, I've pulled every square foot of many, many marshes. Every one of them, when you've got a little bayou that connects two lakes, that bayou's deeper every single time. It's just the water flow over the years. It carves out that bottom, and you've got a little place that you can jump up. And once we're up, for the most part, we're not touching bottom. Mm-hmm. And we're up and running. But that plowing through the mud and all that, most of the marshes, it really doesn't bother too much on the upper coast. But you get down here where I'm at, you got grass, and it's detrimental to the bottom to go running through there. Plus, you're messing it up for everybody else.
Fishing.
So
yeah.
I pole in, pole out, pole to deep enough water to take off. If I was on a bigger boat, I'd use a trolling motor to do the same.
Caleb, I've been in some clear water and seen the divots, and I know this is something that you feel strongly about as well.
Oh, Absolutely. It's there. Like Scott said, there's a deep spot everywhere, and it's not hard to find it. Whenever you're chugging along with your trolling motor, you'll see whenever you quit spinning mud. It's not tough at all. You know, and one thing we were talking about as far as, you know, how we work in our trolling motor to get on the fish. Whenever you come running into a lake on your big motor and you throw a wake across that lake, especially on the upper coast, the lower coast, you can get away with it a little bit more. Up here, let's say, you know, West Matagorda Bay and north. I really don't know about Port O'Connor because I haven't messed with it much there. But I know down in Corpus, the fish aren't bothered as wakes as much. But up here, whenever you run your big boat, your big motor through that lake and wake that lake, you have probably shut down everything that's going on in it. And when there's other people in there with you, that becomes a real issue. And that's something that Pat and I have been seeing on the weekends is we'll have some schools going around here and there in the pond, and there's guys in their big motors that are jumping from school to school to school. Yeah. Well, in about 10 minutes, it's done. So it even if you're not near a school, running that big motor can really mess stuff up. So know that, too, if you're going out fishing schools. It's time to get off the big one, get on the trolling motor, be quiet. That you can putt here and there, but whenever you get on plane, you are wrecking what's going on in that pond for yourself and people around you if there's somebody else in there.
And if you do that, good transition there to the question we had for JT on maintenance schedules and stuff. This was a good question. One of our listeners said, has the podcast discussed recommended maintenance intervals? Newbie here bought a boat with 55 hours on the 250 Yamaha, took it into maintenance at 100 hours last year, put 44 hours on it this year. Should I take it in on a one-year anniversary or do I wait for a certain milestone on the hours? Well, we have just the guy for you here. That is JT. I actually asked him because this was another just a verbal question I got on the boat one day. Is there such a thing as winterizing your boat? I think there's a kind of an offshoot of that. But let's go to JT Koshy at the boatyard real quick and get the answer from someone who absolutely has the engineering and experience background to answer that question. One thing about the weather cooling here along the Gulf Coast, we are still a warm weather coast. Last week we had really warm temperatures for December, but it got us to thinking, I'm back with JT at the boatyard in Kima, Texas. Is there such a thing as winterizing your boat, even when you're in the warm weather states, as most of our listeners here in the podcast? So I did want to get right back to the source. And JT, you guys have boats coming in all the time. You know, what is there a need for, quote, winterizing a boat when you're in a warm weather state, and what might that entail?
I mean, basically, when you hear that word winterizing, it's got a big thing to do with the engine itself. And for most of your shallow water fishermen or people who just fish in general, they're running outboard motors. So winterizing is actually when you fill up all the water passages in a motor with antifreeze. That's like in a V8 or V6 inboard motor. Mm-hmm. That motor sits horizontally. So anywhere in that motor, if you have water in there, when it gets real, real cold, and I mean, we don't see it much down here.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice. But when it gets below freezing, we do get a few days. And last year was pretty bad.
Right.
That water will actually expand and in some cases crack the block and do some pretty big, you know, a lot of its insurance coverage. But on outboards, the motor is vertical. And so let's say when you flush your motor, if you come in, all that water drains down to the bottom of the engine and out the exhaust or the hub of the motor. So, you know, as far as your engine, there's not really a need for winterizing. Just as far as, I mean, electronics and in general, if you can keep your boat inside, that's better for everything. But as far as the actual care of your motor, there's no need to winterize it and not use your boat. You know, if you can get out there and put a couple jackets on, keep on fishing.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I use the winter months for, you know, if it's a month that I'm not expecting to fish a lot, just kind of as a mental trigger to just get service done, to just go through the paces of making sure all the wires are good, you know, all the connections, all the electronics and the motor itself. I'm guessing that's something that you would recommend, you know, not, I mean, I know we want people to go to the boatyard, but not just even those who don't, you know, just get that mental trigger that month. For me, maybe it's January, where you can say, all right, I'm not necessarily winterizing the boat, but this is the month I need to go do this, 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 and this. Is that correct?
100%. Yeah. It's definitely a good time to check on things. We all know when you go out on your boat, a lot of people, if they have an older boat, you know, there's that one thing that you say, hey, man, I should really look at that at some point. The wintertime is a great time to do it. And, you know, like John said, I'd love everyone's business, but I care more about people just taking care of their stuff as
not
best
getting
they can.
Stuck.
Yeah, 100%. And especially when it's cold out there. If you're out there when it's cold and you're stuck, it's almost as bad as being out there when it's too hot.
Yeah. Yeah, no question about it. So JT and the Boatyard in Kima, they will take care of you on those things. What are, just real quick here, what is your immediate checklist for, you know, we have a lot of new boaters, you know, they listen to the podcast, they get into it more. All of a sudden they buy a boat, maybe a John boat, maybe a midsize, maybe a big boat. You know, what are the things like, we all know, I mean, we all get told by the dealers, as anybody who buys a boat from you, as I did with the Freedom Warrior, you say, do this this month, do this 90-day checkout, blah, blah, blah. But once you have your boat established, what are the annual things that you must get checked?
Here's something, like, we recommend an annual service. So if you do an annual service, you look over the motor and you see any little things that you might not catch when that cowling's on all the time. And these are some things that we check when it's here. But if you do it yourself, you can kind of look around too. An annual service is an oil change, spark plug change, fuel filters, and gear lube.
Yeah.
One big example is, you know, if you're out there fishing a lot, there's a chance you might have ran through some fishing line at some point. You've got seals in your lower unit, and fishing line will tear up behind your prop and get into those seals. Just a general check every time you go out on the water. If your engine's down, say where you store it, say leave it in the garage or something, and you tilt your engine down, if it sits for a day and there's a leak somewhere there, you'll usually see some gear lube dripping from the lower unit. If anyone sees that, I highly recommend you get it pressure tested or resealed as soon as you can, because if water gets into your lower unit, running up on plane, it'll fry that whole lower unit pretty quick. And, you know, paying $400 for a full reseal of the lower unit, or if you do it yourself or out there, you know, $50-$60 for seals and the tools to get it done yourself, it's much better than that anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000 lower unit you might get.
I mean, you mentioned the fishing line. I didn't even have my other Warrior for a year. And when I sold it, you guys pulled off the back of the boat. There was a lot of fishing line on my prop, and I had no idea. It didn't feel that different, or I didn't feel it that different. It's just something you got to check.
Yeah. I mean, if it happens, sometimes you won't know. And, you know, if there's not too much underneath there, you won't know until the seals go. And, you know, if you're doing fishing a lot and you're not really watching things, you could just blow up your lower unit. It could be a brand new boat. It could be a 20-year-old motor. It could happen pretty much at any time if you're not too careful.
All right. That's JT Koshy over at the Boatyard. And of course, we highly recommend it right here on the Bite Me podcast. Go see him, get those things checked. And now, you know, you don't necessarily have to winterize your boat, but you do have to do something, and the winter might be a good time to make yourself do that. Appreciate it, man. Let's get back to the podcast now. So, Caleb, what's your strategy on maintenance and boat maintenance? Man, I just love teeing these up for you. It's one of my favorite things of the podcast.
I make sure I have my boat in every 95 hours, full service, full change, and everything clean. I usually have it waxed at the same time, upholstery. Definitely conditioned. I will stop everything I'm doing to get in and get that boat maintained and waxed every time.
Scott, your thoughts on that?
That's so much crap.
to be fair.
Recommended maintenance is 100 hours.
Well, exactly. Go ahead, Scott.
The thing is, he does get his boat serviced regularly because he has to bring it in there all the time.
Bingo, it's in great shape.
I mean, he's in there more often than he's supposed to be. Yeah.
When you buy my boat, you're basically getting a new one.
Because
everything on it is new. Everything on it is new.
By the way, just another quick shout out here, because we got the expo over at Fishing Tackle Unlimited on Saturday. So come out and see us, ask us some questions. You may even hear your own voice on the podcast in a future episode. But I just got this text from my guy Tim over at Wade Wright. If you can't get enough, they're going to be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Fishing Expo in Hitchcock. And so you can get Wade Wright. There's going to be a lot of people out there, but you can get go say hello to the guys. And I got a hunch that if you just verbally tell him, you don't even have to go online. And maybe he'll tell me what an idiot I am for saying this on the podcast. But I have a feeling if you walk up to Tim or Jason at the Hitchcock Expo this weekend, and Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and you just say, "Hey, I want the Bite Me 20 discount here," I got a feeling that he'll still give it to you. And that, of course, is all the Wade Wright, the complete package that you can get there, 20% off. And if anybody gets in trouble for saying that, it'll be me. So it's cool. But I think he'll take care of you. What's that?
It comes out of your check.
It comes out of my check. Exactly. All right. So a couple more things here before we get out of here. And this is just the John Lopez special, because oftentimes when I'm on the water, and I just had a killer day on Friday. Absolutely killer. You guys saw the pictures. Saturday, the exact opposite. Those poor guys on the boat, man, I was telling stories like crazy because we weren't catching a lot of fish.
Hey, it's the guide thing, man. Should have been here yesterday.
Yeah, should have been. I literally told them that, which you shouldn't, yeah. But I literally told them, man, if you guys were here yesterday, we would have killed them. But Caleb, I was on the west end of East Matagorda Bay, and I was talking to you about this before. I could have reached down and both my hands grabbed bait pods, giant bait pods, the size of a pool table, just everywhere. I mean, just their noses were out of the water. Their heads were out of the water. They were looking at us. And I'm like, all right. I threw the kitchen sink at them. And I mean, top waters and corkies even. I put the power pole down and off the bottom, and my famous, you know, popping cork and twitch baits, and my goodness, we couldn't get on them. But what do you do in that situation? I'll get to Scott in a second on the same thing, because I know we've all seen this, but the pods, the bait is literally almost in your boat.
And I've been in that exact same situation, particularly where you're talking about, where they're just huge rafts of mullet just lazily cruising around everywhere. Their nose and their mouth is out of the water. You can see their little heads bobbing everywhere. I didn't do good at all. And the only thing I could think of, I had a guy a long time ago. He told me, whenever you see those little crabs swimming around, just not worried about a thing in the world, the fish aren't eating. And if you think about it, those mullet aren't worried about a thing in the world. They're mm-hmm. just cruising around doing little mullet things. And Saturday, I had a really tough day Saturday too. I think we only caught like three or four redfish all day long on Saturday. And it's the barometer. There's no doubt about it, Scott. It's the barometer. Okay.
Hey, I'm on your side on this, Caleb.
I was totally having 20 to 40 fish days every day for 3 weeks. That barometer spiked up, and all of a sudden the mullet are doing the backstroke and the fish aren't wanting to eat. It's the barometer, Scott.
Scott, before you get to the barometer, I know you've experienced exactly what Caleb and I are talking about.
Yeah. I mean, when you've got relaxed bait fish, go somewhere else. I mean, those bait fish, they've got their little nose sticking up. From the polling platform, I can watch it happen. And I see those big schools like that, and they're cruising around in the marsh, and they don't have a care in the world. And I haven't seen a redfish for the past hour.
No.
I don't know where they go. Don't know what they do. But that's almost a dead giveaway that nothing really is happening right now.
I think it feeds into what Caleb and I are saying with the barometer, because why wouldn't they be? If that much bait is up there and the fish were not shut down, they wouldn't be cool. You know, they'd be nervous. They'd be running away from stuff.
Yeah, well, I talked to my fisheries biologist a lot about barometer, and he's on my side. And he's got degrees hanging on the wall.
I want to know how many fishes he catches with those degrees.
What does that degree get him?
He actually catches a lot of fish.
Because John and I were, on Saturday, John and I were 30 miles apart. And where I was at, I had absolutely, the fishing was so good the day before that I power pulled down, and I said there was a guy on the front and a lady on the back. And the guy on the front, I said, "You catch the schools that come past the front, and you catch the schools that come past the back." And we were doubled up all day long. And then Saturday, man, that barometer rose up, and I could if I hit them with my boat, they'd move. That's the only way you could get them to even wiggle.
It's got to be that. We're different strokes and different opinions on this. Hey, before we get to what would Scott do this weekend? Scott, call up that all your apps, because I know you got this thing dialed in. I'm going to start with you, but I do want to mention what I was catching all these fish on, and it was pretty darn incredible when I got the right colors on. We're knocking tail on the bottom under birch, looking for bigger trout, bigger fish, and we ended up catching some reds like that, which was really cool. The reds were mixed in with the trout. And the Deadly Dudley on my popping cork and on my regular jig head off the bottom as well. Both of those places, go to deadlydudley.com. Use the Bite Me 20 code. It's a given now with our friends at Deadly Dudley and Knock and Tail. Go to deadlydudley.com, type in Bite Me 20, you get 20% off. Same thing at mycoastoutdoors.com. Bite Me 20 on the code. And you're good to go right there. Lots of good information on the skinny water this week. The question is, Scott, what would Scott do? Got some interesting weather, particularly on Saturday. It's going to be blowing and going, maybe a little bit too much blowing and going. What would Scott do?
Scott would stay home on Saturday because, yeah. I would go to Fishing Tackle Unlimited and hang out there and
come see
and
us.
Talk to people at the expo, because all up and down the coast, everything I'm seeing is 28 gusting to 40, mm-hmm. 25 gusting to 38, and rain. So I know Caleb's fishing on Saturday because Caleb, he has a fella coming in from out of state to fish. He's flying in to fish with the famous Caleb McCumber. And, yeah, good luck with that, Caleb, because you will – hey, good news. You're going to have the whole place to yourself.
And the barometer is going to be low.
And the, yeah, that's right.
But hey, I'm either going to rail them on Saturday or I'm not.
It depends on how this wind comes in. They're showing
that's
northeast.
Some insightful stuff right there, Caleb.
I'm either showing a little northeast in this
or I'm not.
Yeah. So the backstory is that – we started talking about this yesterday. I had today open. Today was some pretty ideal go fishing with Caleb conditions. And I texted the guy on Saturday and I said, hey, why don't we fish tomorrow? Can you do that? And he said, I've already got the airplane tickets bought. I said, do what? He said, yeah, I've got the airplane tickets. It's going to be blowing 40 on Saturday. He said, man, that's good. I'm easy going. I said, all right, we'll figure something out.
All right. So that's a perfect for those who are going to be daring like yourself. You know, you
all
are
five
gonna
of you.
You are going to be fishing. So what would Caleb do this coming weekend?
You know, if I had to fish, well, I do have to fish Saturday. Yeah. The thing about Saturday is there's a tide dump coming. If it stays out of the direction it's supposed to and blows like it's supposed to, there's a tide dump coming, and it's a real one. Mm-hmm. Okay. But the trouble is, if I take the guy out Saturday morning, I'm dealing with winds out of the south shifting to the northwest around lunchtime, if Windfinder is correct, which it hasn't been lately. So I'm hoping maybe I get a little reprieve Saturday morning. But what my point being is that tide dump isn't going to start until at the earliest mid-afternoon. If it starts blowing out of that northwest at noon, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 o'clock, water really starts moving, right?
Right.
So I have two choices on Saturday. I could go out in the morning and hope that I get a reprieve from the wind before that front gets here. Or then I could go out in the evening and then hope that right before dark, that tide is really ripping out, and then fish the dump, you know, in front of a drain somewhere, mm-hmm. and go that way. So I'm going to have to Friday, I'm going to have to really, you know, tap my noggin like, oh, little Winnie the Pooh, and think and try to figure this out. But that's the problem I have right there is if that northwest wind started early in the morning, then I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to go out mid-morning or so, we're going to fish the dump, but it doesn't. And so you really won't be able to make that decision until, honestly, Saturday morning about 6 o'clock.
All right. Well, these guys are going to have a good time with you.
Just to throw it out there, I mean, this is like a phone conversation with Caleb and I, okay? Y'all are just going to be on the inside of it. You got 8-9 miles an hour before daylight and high tides at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Then you're going to have falling tide at daylight. It starts off north and then it kind of switches to northeast on you by noon from what they're showing now. So I don't know how much tide dump you're going to get, but you're going to be fishing an outgoing tide until late afternoon. So with natural falling tide and that strong of a wind, that's the one thing that, you know, we always look for the northwest. We always want that. Northwest 2025 is going to make a dump. North, northeast at 30 to 40.
With an outgoing tide.
With an outgoing tide, it could dump. It could dump pretty good even with a northeast. Mm-hmm. Now, it's just slightly. It's north, northeast.
Yeah, no, I'm looking. They did change it. It's north, northeast now. So now I'm honestly not even predicting a dump at this point. But at the, you know, it, so Pat, our buddy Pat Gardner and I were sitting around my camper two nights ago, and he canceled a trip yet to yesterday with the Anglers Anonymous crew. And because he canceled it because the wind forecast was showing 25 miles an hour and just terrible. And my comment was, I've been down here for 6 or 7 weeks now, and every time that they say it's going to be terrible in the morning, it's not. It is absolutely perfect. And it was. And so that's kind of why I'm thinking that Saturday morning, we could get a reprieve until 10, 11, 12 o'clock in the morning. And then, and if in that scenario, then you're fishing a prefrontal bite that could be absolutely fire. Yeah. You know, so this weekend, it's roll the dice, see what happens.
This is definitely a hero or zero kind of day.
Yeah.
I mean, you're either going to get your butt kicked and not even see a fish, or you could just slam them on a good falling tide.
Now, one thing I'm not going to do is go to the south shoreline of a bay. That's right. Not going to happen.
Yeah.
Bar none. Pat and I did that a couple of weeks ago, and I think our top speed in 25-foot boats coming back across the bay was 12 miles an hour.
I've been there, and that's not fun either. You're bouncing around everywhere.
Bring your grunts. Because they're showing rain with this thing too.
They're bringing me a full suit on Thursday, and I am driving from Matagorda to Katy just to have it for Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of the Anglers Anonymous guys, I did get another text. Just trying to help our listeners here, man. They got the Costas 20% off for Christmas. They got Sims Grundon's Florida Fishing Products 15% off, and all kinds of other stuff with the Corkies and down south Deadly Dudley Knock-A-Tail. All that stuff. You can go to their Facebook page and find out more. So what I'm hearing from both you guys is wake up, get a good bead on things, and get the most up-to-date forecast that you can get on your phone and kind of make the call there. Huh, Caleb? I'm guessing that's what we're going to be doing.
That's what I've had to do every single morning is wake up and see what it is, because it hasn't been sticking to the forecast whatsoever at all.
All right, boys. This was a fun show. I thought it was pretty informative. I know, Scott, you're going to be actually some fun hunting next week, but we'll get the podcast done. Don't forget to come see us at the Fishing Tackle Unlimited Expo at the Katy location. We get a lot of listeners out there, and you guys have been great. It's great to put some faces, meet some people, and go from there. Get your questions ready. It'll be live. Caleb, what else you got, buddy?
I just made an executive decision. At Anglers Anonymous, Lost Sparrow gear is also 20% off.
Oh, good.
Let's do that.
That's your stuff. 20% off as well on that. Oh, and Scott Null Photography, since we're talking about scottnullphotography.com, since we're talking about gear, get your Bite Me stuff ready. Take a picture with it with Caleb or myself or Scott or just on your own and post it on the group page. Don't forget to join the group page. Don't forget to subscribe. You guys are awesome. Scott, Caleb, you guys have a great weekend. Caleb, I'm interested to see exactly what you're doing this weekend. I am not going to be on the water. I'm going to be out at that expo, and we're looking forward to it. But everybody, have a great week, and if you don't catch some fish, guess what? We can put you on some next week, or at least try with all your questions and our topics as well. You guys have a good one. Until we talk to you next time, catch them up, and we'll see you next week.